Yeah. Well, when did you leave the army and come go back to England?
Came back to England, lived and come on reserve in 1929. That took me up to 1932 on Army Reserve, so that's why I was too old for the other bony, although they was asking for instructors, but the mother being as she was.
What year did you leave the Army?
1929. Yeah. 32, actually. 1932, I was transferred to Army Reserve, but 1929, when I first came onto reserve, because they give you a fortnight penny discharge. It is time to think whether you're going to sign on or leave the army altogether, see? Mm-hmm. Fortnight penny discharge, you're still in the army. And it's what they call penny discharge, you get a fortnight's leave. That gives you time to make up your mind whether you want to sign on again, continue with your service in the army, or be transferred to the Army Reserve, see? Mm-hmm. For which you get a large amount of which you earn a day. Anyway, I came out in 1929, was transferred to Army Reserve, and of course, like a lot more people, first we got married. Well, of course it was Alan and Dad's mum at that time. And well, she didn't have much of a life at home, so she thought to herself, well, I'll give it as it was. When I got in the house, Mrs. Sutton greeted me. When I came home, I came home to Sudan, and back and then went to Colchester.
Who was Mrs. Sutton?
Hey?
Tell me who Mrs. Sutton was.
Mrs. Sutton was my mother-in-law of Amy, that was my previous work, the mother of Johnny and Anna. Mm-hmm. Of course, I went into the house and mother was out. Mother had the bottom part and Mrs. Sutton had the top part. Well, she had sons and daughters and, well, they wasn't very old. Mum was about 4 years younger than me, but anyway, I wasn't interested in girls. As a matter of fact, I never had been. I never had a girlfriend before, and bothered. See, if I used to go, say, to the battalion and a dance, and that's, I used to go there and sit down and maybe see somebody, like a woman who was sitting on her own. I wasn't shy or anything of women. It was just that I didn't bother. Because being playing sports and doing my own work while I was in the army, well, I didn't have a lot of time. But if we ever had battalion or regimental dancing, I should go along just for company, you know, get on my own. Because I used to play football and everything, you know, you name it, what sportsmen, and I was in it. And I told you, when the general come round, he used to fetch me up to do the job. In the cake, see, because I had the latest stuff on physical training. So when the general came up and asked me what I was doing, what exercise I was performing, and what benefit the pupils derived from this so-called exercise, I was able to tell him, what they was deriving from this particular exercise. See, because I knew what derived meant is what is easy. They didn't think like this. You see, generals are like this. One particular occasion when I was in India, the general came around and he wrote a bit of a puzzle on the board. It was a jumbo mumbo effort. But anyway, I sorted it out, and when I finally condensed it down, what it meant was that the ordinary private is not allowed to think for himself in case he upsets the plans of the blooming general. No, that was correct. That's exactly what he was on about. And it was jumbled up, so you had to sort it out and not forget all the words they put in. Okay. Anyway, it's a long time ago.
Now tell me about you getting married and...
I came out of the army, well, I was downstairs with Mum, and on the first week I came home, Mrs. Sutton said, on a Thursday, she said, I'm going to... Well, everybody's at work during the week, so there's nowhere much to go, and I wasn't a great beer... Well, I wasn't a beer drinker at all. Yeah. And So, I used to visit my aunts and that. As a matter of fact, I was going over to my aunt's over Frith Road, Lantonstone, for a bit of a party that I was going to have over the weekend. But apart from that, Mrs. Sutton, she got ready. She said to me, I'm going to meet my daughter Amy now. She said, do you know what she said to me about Amy? No, she said she's in service. She looks after kids. And she lives in over Chris Street Poplar. See? So, on the spur of the moment, I said, well, I ain't got anything to do. I said, I might just have a run over there with you. So, of course, when we went over to Chris Street, Lindy Draper shop, and Jews owned it. And they were having half a day off, and she came out, and as she shut the door back towards me, when she turned round and I looked at her, it was like, because I've had it with lightning. That was the one, but what I've been looking at, I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I thought, I'm not going to have anyone. That's what I was thinking to myself, used to think to myself, maybe I was a bit big-headed. But anyway, that's how it was. When I turned around, I knew this was my girl. She afterwards told me exactly the same. She backed up, and she wanted a string for a mandolin. It was broken. Anyway, I could play a mandolin and still can. But that's the part and the point. But I never let on. As it went along, she said, I've got to go and get a string for me mandolin mum, she said, to Mrs. Sutton. So I said, well, I'll come along with her. So the old girl says, yeah, I'll go home. She's a bit out of the way. She was obviously like leaving us on her own. So we bought a string at the top of Great Eastern Road. There used to be a place just around the corner, top of Great Eastern Road, where they sold strings of mandolin, all sorts of instruments. So we went inside and we bought this string, and there's a lot of paper in it, which I normally do anything for girls or women. I mean, I never let them paper anything. But during the dances, to go back a little bit, while women were sitting around on their own, not dancing, I would get up and go and say, well, I had my own ideas of opening up conversations, and well, it was an obvious one. I used to say, well, I can't dance much, I'm not much cop at it. I said, but would you like to dance? I said, it must be better than sitting here. I said, doing nothing, see? So they said, yes, because of that they got, and then went, oh, well, they said, well, it wasn't bad. They said, I didn't give myself any marks at all as a dancer. Although I could have danced if I'd travelled, because I used to do, as a PT instructor, FA and swords was part of it. See, and so the footwork was there. So for football was very agile at that particular time. So that's the way I used to get a dance when I was in the army. But to go back to where I was, we walked the stream, and as I went along, she said, I have to work all the weekend. I said, well, I've got to go to a party, I said. But over my aunt's, I said, Saturday night, I said, but if you like, I said, I don't want to go there. I said, can you get the night off? I said, well, I'll take you somewhere. You know, we accepted one another, that we've known one another for years. And this is the first time I set eyes on her. And you've seen a photo of it. I mean, she did go in a beauty competition and win it. And she was young. So she said, well, I've got to go. She said, I must go to work, she said, Thursday night. So, without thinking, I said, well, I'm going to soon have you over that job. And you ain't going to be stuck in no Jew shop, I said, but this is what I said. You ain't going to be stuck in no Jew shop, I said, for all those hours a week and get out of a day off. So I said, as a matter of fact, I said, I'll go to the party. So I don't realise I want to go then. And I didn't, not then, see. She said, no, she said, you go to the party, she said. And he said, I'll see you when you come out, when I come out first. I said, you won't. I said, so I'm going to have you out of that job before Thursday. See, just like that. So she said, well, you go to your party. And I went to Arnold's party over there, and it was a smashing party. Well, there was girls over there, but there was your cousins and all that. I mean, I was used to meeting around with them, but there was no particular one I ever went anything on before until I met her. Of course, I'll go to the party, and when I come back, when she came home on a Thursday, I said, well, now's the time, I said, to pack it in. And, you know, after one or two bits of palaver and that, so she packed it in and got a job in the Lanchester Road, right opposite the fire station, you know, what I'm talking about, the bell, I think it is. And she got a job this time, of course, the pavement at that time is to broaden out. And that was from in the morning from 8 or 9 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night, see? And the old Jew boy, he know a lot. I went in there because I was on the dot there at 8 o'clock. And when it got over to tell him a bit, I used to stroll up to the door and say, you finished? And he said, no. I said, well, it's about time it was, I said. Because you're supposed to be, it's 8 o'clock when you finish. And I told the bloke so. I said, she works out at 8 o'clock. I said, not half past. I said, clean that, this, that and the other. See, because at that particular time, I mean, I wouldn't bother without nobody. Why should I be? Anyway, she kept this job for a while, and finally she got another job over Dalston, in a rubber place, a factory or something over there. But anyway, while this was going on, I was caught, you know. We planned to get married, and just like that, we just walked along, and I said, where shall we get married? When? So she said, well, we'll have to think it out at the time. She said, as regards the money, well, all I got in the world was a shilling a day, which amounted to £4.12, that is, to send it down. And I got £10, I got £1 blood money to come from being in the army. And every year you're in the army, you've got £1 this particular time. Magnificent sum, wasn't it? Well, anyway, it counted about, well, they said, give me 10 and they give me the other 2 afterwards. But anyway, I decided to get married on this, well, because stuff was very cheap, Jim. But you've got to cut your corn. Anyway, we contrived between us to fix up the wedding. We had the reception at home in Cullum Street, that's not there now. But that's where it was. We borrowed the forms and tables from Salvation Army. It used to be up the lane, because the kids used to go there when they were younger. We got tables and forms, and managed to lay in enough nosh and beer like where the rest were money left. Because when I woke up in the morning, after my wedding, I was broke. Never had a thought of it all. Yet I'd written off to different places for a job, see. Like one I wrote to Butters, didn't get any holds up, and then they were advertising for salesmen or reps to go around with paint from a place down that road, I forget what it was, it's a big paint, Bergen's or what it was, I think that's what it was, Bergen. And they were advertising for salesmen, you know, shoveling salesmen to go around and sell reps, you know. So, of course, they said they'd had a big list. I said, well, so we'll start at the bottom. I said, get good men. I mean, I was always, you know, always had an answer on those things. But anyway, when I got shells and paper come down, I don't know about this job. Get a better one than this. So, of course, then I got the idea of going up to, in between that, as I told you, in between that, just before I got married, there was a place at Brompton Road where I'd already signed on when I came out of the army. Chelsea, run by generals, I mean. And of course I went and signed on, and he said, if I got anything come up, he said, I'll let you know, sir. Well, before I got married, a letter came down to say, if I wasn't working, would I... What's that for?
You hear thumping. Sounds very loud.
Do I, mate? I'll put my hand on there. When I wasn't working, when I came out, I told you about this, and while I was still not married, because it took 2 or 3 months or so to clear up, and this letter came down to say, well, I've got a rock road, they got something for... Might suit me. When I went up there, they gave me a letter And the place where I went to was somewhere in Westminster, some sort of college it was, and, boarding school, both of them boarding schools. And the job was mine, providing I was married, which I wasn't. They wanted me to live in, so they put a kibosh on that. So when I finally get married, and I had a job on a building. One of the mates come out of the army, one of mine, I met him, a bloke named Gurley. And he said, "You worked with John?" I said, "No." He said, "Well," he didn't ask me then. He'd been down to see me after I got married. He'd been, and of course, I was out. And he said, "Well, he'd come back tonight." He told Amy, like, he'd be back that night. So I come back, he said, "You're not working, John." He said, I've got a job for you." So I said, "What job's that?" You know, you're on. So he said, "Well," he said, "on a building." He said, "We've got to build a house at," I'll remember the name of the road later on, but I can't remember it now, but it was right opposite Coronation Gardens, a copper wanted house built. And this bloke was the gaffer of it, and him and another one who was running between them, see. And so of course I said, "What sort of job is it?" He said, "Well, just getting a few bricks and mortar up a ladder," he said, "on the scaffold." So I can't carry the odd. I said, "I'll get the sack." And anyway, he said, "I could arm the gardener." He said, "No." I said, "Well, I'll get them up here." I said, "But it won't be any scientific way." I said, "Wherever you want." I said, "I'll do it, but I'll carry them up here on my head." So he said, "I was pretty agile then, I mean, and fit." So I got the job down there, done that job. All I was doing is, gets the job coming down, a letter comes down to say, "Got to go to Brompton Road. I got something that might suit me." And I goes up there, married now, and there's a job, but I've got to be single. So I've got nothing out of that lot. But this is how it used to be with me. Anyway, when I did this brick jade job and I finally started on in it, well, then mother, Amy, she was real upset. My back was red raw where I've been carrying these bricks. See, so anyway, I said, "Don't worry about it." I said, "I can manage them." And of course, she had, as a child, she had some fever. And it left her with a wig up, because nobody knew, nobody cared, I suppose, at that particular time. See, I said, "Well," for a while she went to work, and I went to work. But when I got the chance, I was more out of work than in work. Well, when she couldn't go to work anymore, well, she had a bad ticker, it was brilliant at the show. You know, her lips were blue and she could walk just about from here up the top. She'd go up the top, but finally, when it finished up, she couldn't walk, not from here to there. And she went up the top, she rolled up against the wall, holding her up. Yet she had the look on her of a perfectly, like a country girl with her colour. So all the neighbours used to knock and ask if she wanted any errands. I said, "We're going up to stop Amy." But they went to me, good days. Yeah, we had some good neighbours. Mary next door was one of them. She knew her. Like your mother knew Mary. And so did Amy knew her. And Jack. So of course I used to go to work, and when I fell out of work, I'd get 28 bob a week all the labour exchange. See, to keep like the four of us paying rent. 28 bob, you imagine it. And, because what I used to do was get up very early, go down Stratford Market, and lay it out on lemons and oranges and celery and beetroots and all sorts of things, and see, especially beetroots, and take them home and boil them up in a copper, and fill the house up with steam and smoke. Look. And then, after they'd done, I had a basket. And I said, "Take them down to Green Street, stand outside of Woolworths." You know, over Green Street of Woolworths. I'm still there now. I stand in the gutter. Well, if you had a copper on a beat, it was a bit sort of benevolent, you know, tolerant. He wouldn't take any notice, but sometimes you had coppers on there that chase you for what they call obstruction. You're standing with a blatant bastard stuff around your neck. They call it obstruction. And no idea to that, all right. And one of the things I was to stand out there, best part, sometimes up at 12 o'clock at night, And I just come up there with a jug of tea or whatever it was. And I was standing freezing, bleeding, cold. Oh, just like the rag shop. I couldn't afford to buy anything. And jug of whatever it was. Of course, Mother Sutton used to look after the kids. Well, Alan and Johnny. We had an old pram. We should live over here then, purposely over here, mind you. Up here. We should live by the olive tree, Pevensey Road. Just sort of flats there. And there's a cart from over to the old lady in Carlin Street. When we finish the night, we should get them from there and wheel them home, get them about 1 o'clock in the morning, like where we lived. Until we got the house right next to, over the back from the old girl, well, she had something to do with that, Mrs. Foster. And then, of course, we moved over to there, but while we lived over by the olive tree, jobs seemed to come, you know, a bit building jobs, especially I helped build on Collier Road, where they call it, Rain Road actually, at Romford, down on a farm, you know, right out where they built Dagenham and that, because I fares, all fares, and they're up about £2 a week, that's all you've got as a thing of me, Bob. And I worked with Eaton Hills at Dalston. I worked with Thingamy Bob's in Stratford, Sciences, and the other lot, there's two of them. Out in the building, Bovis was another one. This is in and out job because, and at the right over Barking side, another lot. It was a job that they used to put the flag up when he was reaching the top. Topping out, they called it. When he was putting the stack on the pot, that was topping out. See, they put the flag up. You're out of work. See, you're topping up there as if it's celebration and you're out of work. Of course, the only time you got, only come up here 4 o'clock on a Friday night and say, sorry, John, or wherever it might be, I've got to finish you up. Now you're out in the wild. You can be out for months, or you might be lucky, like once or twice I was, the foreman said, when I worked on a Ripple Road Barking. He said, well, he said, I've got to put you up, John. He said, I worked for Glenys, he was a councillor, for a Labour council. And he said, I've got to put you off, John. He said, I was there quite a while. And he said, I've got to put you off. He said, but said he wants a bloke, he said, round a corner. And of course, up the top and round a corner. And he said, go and see him. He said, tell him I'll come, mate. He used to play outside right for Barking Town, amateur team. So he said, go and see him. So I went round and see him and he said, yeah, he said, you can come start with me Monday. He said, it'd be all right sometimes. You fell into it. Another one in particular, I worked out of Raynham somewhere. I forget exactly where it was. And I'm carrying bricks up a ladder, you know. So when I finished, the foreman said, oh, no, he said, there's a job for you. He said, I'll poke the old Bill with the plasterer. So he said, he'll take you on. So of course, I never worked with a plasterer, but there was, you know, like stalactites and different stuff they stick on the wall, because there's a coating there with cement, and then, there's a coating with cement, and then put on stalactite and then different stuff until they finish it all with keen cement, or whatever they finish the wall off with, see. So, because you have a odd, then you want it as big as a wheelbarrow, because it was slosh you had to carry. And there was no ladders, it was stairs. Well, I mean, I'm capable of climbing up and down him. So when I got it on a slotty on the board, I had to work on scaffolding. You know, they do cornice work and all sorts then. You know, it's a real builder's these work. And they should tell me, if you mean, get plaster parish, well, you've got to wet it and move like lightning because it's just in no time, see. So of course, as I chucked it down there with plenty of water on it, they slushed it on, had it on the wall, see. Anyway, they helped out. It was a good firm it was. Anyway, they went down the pain. I see one or two of them, a little job, but they went down the pain because there was a lot of competition in it on at that particular time. And, when I finally got round to this barrel art, 3 years I walked about nearly. And the whole point was...
I say 3 years doing...
Unemployed. Unemployed.
Yeah.
Yeah. About the first.
And that, during that time, you're doing things like selling the fruit. And
that's right. I used to go down and out and get the stuff. And another thing about this was, when Johnny was born, he was born in West Ham Lane. And the hospital, Margaret Lyle's wing this side. As he went in the gate, he used to look up. So I used to go into the gate and look up and whistle like Romeo and Juliet, because I couldn't get there at daytime. I was working, see, I'd gone. So I whistled up to the window about 6 or 7 o'clock at night, and she was right up against the window. We put a curtain on the window. So I'm telling you, no mouthing like what I would try to tell her. You know what I mean? She's saying, I can't, I'll make out what she's saying. And you know, Jim, that birth cost me £4. You got to pay? There was no thing we got, the National Health, like what it is now, what they're trying to brack them out of. I had to pay. So I went over to, went to Glennie's. I see old Bill, he's named a foreman. I said, I want to get a loan. I said, I want Mr. Glennie. I said, do you reckon he'd let me one? I said, I'm on our reserve. I said, I'll get you on the day. And I'll get £4 something, a quarter. And I said, they want £4.07, I think, something like that. I'm not short of figures now, because it's a long time ago. Anyway, he said, yeah, he said, I'll have a word with him. He said, yeah. Anyway, so you go over there. He said, they lent me the money. I said, well, I'll pay you back. I said, well, I'll get me on reserve, because it's come up quarterly, see, which I did. But that's what I had to pay. And the same thing applied to Alan. I mean, he was born in Forest Lane. So he went to nightmare at the time, and Johnny was running around playing with the bloke on the gate. He was 2 years younger. Alan isn't Johnny. And Johnny was playing with the gate when he was making out to chase him. But as soon as he saw his mum, he forgot about Gateman and everybody. He flew up the road after as he came out the entrance, right up the other end. That's when we lived over Bevensey Road, you know, buddy. Think of me, Bob. But then, of course, from then, I'd mate named Templeman, and they used to go down Sutton Market. Matter of fact, one of the girls used to be friends with your mother now, Irish. And of course, we used to go round the doors with this jazz off now too, on this fruit and lot and beetroots. Carry bags of lemons and oranges and beetroots round it. Five of Tappan's lemons. Good stuff. And beetroots, plenty of so many, you know. You know, it's the one I'll get upon me over Akeney, and at that particular time the Welsh was walking around the street singing, and other people were singing, and they'd give them a penny, or whatever it was in the shin. Me, I'm trying to earn a living, I'm not mumping, I'm trying to get something from hard work, which it was, going around the streets with bags on your back there, much as I could carry. I went all round Pond Road and all the places I could think of, and of course as they bought, so they got lighter and lighter and lighter. But when I got home and I finally sorted it out, there was just enough to pay the rent, you know, get us a bit of dinner on a Sunday, maybe Monday, and then it was nothing again. Fish about from here, there and everywhere. I walked the best part of London, walked miles. I just walked around with my Uncle Jim. He's dead now, but he used to like you. You remember him, do you? He used to... They had a tin up in the Blasto Road. And they said, even when he was in bed, like the old, and he died then from there. But he used to like you, he didn't make a fuss of you when you went there. Little Jim, my oldest, especially Louis and the girls. But anyway, we walked all around all the cuts, we went everywhere. And some places you go in, like a building job or whatever it was, and you go in and say any vacancies, like, and the brick foreman say, well, no, he said, full up. He said, nah, I said, but he said, I can't tell you when to come back. He said, because I don't know. When you go into another one, you'd say, I used to have no vacancies on the gate, see, but you were that desperate, that you just went in and asked. See, well, someone say, no, mate, full up. See, they just saw. That's all you need to say. But others would say, can't you read? Of course, I can bleat and read. I said, they're referring to the letters on the gate, see. So I said, cool, I can. I said, there's something else. I said, I'll get up there and fill your bleating eye out. I said, so I'll get a civil answer when I ask a civil question. That's what I used. That was my act to it. So, of course, come out there with a bleeding rage. It wouldn't have took me long to sort them out. Oh, I was capable, make no mistake about that. And come out of the army fit as a bleeding fiddle. I knew the arts. And, of course, he's never got no answer. He walked along the road, a bloke stops with a car. And he says, lost over here, he said, I suppose. I said, yeah, you reckon right, mate. So he said, yeah, I went there and give us a packet of black cats, no smokes. So, see, I always said, have a shrunk on me. So, we got round and saying that he was a rep. I said, he got the jobs up your place, have they? No, he said, unfortunately not, he said. If they did, he said, I don't suppose they're taking over me. He said, I'm struggling. It was struggling times, Jim, this was. Anyway, he had decency to stop and have otherwise, but he wouldn't get a cup of water. And people, and we walked miles and miles and miles.
And when did you go on to working at Rockchild? Was that how soon after leaving the army was Rockchild?
Yeah, no, it was in about 1933 when they made the first Navy. 33 or 35, I was in there when they first made the brass properly bit, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
What was it, Exigen, wasn't it? Exigen steroids.
Oxide, I think.
Anyway, I was in there when they made that. You ready? You ain't got it on,
have
you? Yeah. Oh, well, we'll go back again then before that. I came over to mother-in-law, she was then, and Mrs. Foster. Came over there, and and I want it sorted out. He said, his house going, she said, up the road. He said, but, it's before that. Oh, we came over, we come back to Cullen Street, see? It's halfway up the road. The rock house down there, it was in. So I remember when I was courting. So I said, up home weekends, like from Colchester. So I was in charge of mess rooms, I told you. And say, I'll get hold of me on, don't worry about him. It'd be two or three yobos in the front, as we used to go up Cat Stanley, you know, the alley that went up the top. You don't remember Cullen Street, do you? And I said, well, catch hold of me on, and don't let go. Anyway, I suppose through there, they wouldn't know the other way. I said, "Buck, I wouldn't frighten no one." I tell you, I took on a case for Lions about that time. Not aggressive, but well confident I could take care of myself, Jim. Anyway, we moved back into Cullen Street, and Mrs. Sutton said, "I was halfway up next door to two brothers that sold newspapers in Stratford. I forget their name at the time being, but it was two brothers, Prankton." An Alf, I think it was, and one sold outside the Swan, you know, and the other one was up by the Bull, I think. Up by the pub, it shut down, used to be an inn in the olden days. I've got my handkerchief in here, Jim. I ain't got it here. Can you go in and get it? It's on the chair.
Yeah, here's a paper one.
Yes. Take that for a morsel. So we had this house next door to this woman and two sons who sold papers. Went on all right for a little while. We had the downstairs part of it and the three rooms. And upstairs was a bloke worked on the castle. I've even forgot his name. Anyway, went on for a little while, and he said one day, I was room upstairs as well. So he said, can he let me have that room? He said, you don't use it, do you? So I said, no. I said, as a matter of fact, I don't. I said, you know. As I said, I was never aggressive. I was all confident I could look after myself. But he had enough kitchen up to fill up the room. And all I had in there was my odd in the cupboard. And a pair of curtains like Amy put up. But it was an empty room because we had plenty of room down there, three rooms downstairs. So we included the front room, the bedroom and the kitchen. And it was one of those places where you, as you went in, the stairs went up and then you went down a corridor, a bit of a passageway where you lived, up with the other rooms on the right hand of you. So I said, no, I said, I don't mind. I said, well, how much rent? I said, well, I don't much. I said, about a shilling, 1 and 6. And down there, I said, not really. So he said, oh, he said, 1 and 6. I said, all right. And that went on for a little while. And next door, they had a load of ruffians. And up the other side, they had another lot. Wilson's this side, and then Scarlett's. What a load of rights they was. A gang brigade. Frightened everybody to death. Because Mother Sutton said to me when we were up there, she said, yeah, let me out, look after yourself, Johnny. She said, where you're going to go? So I said, don't worry. She was a great big woman too. Hefty. Stand up and fight like a man, she could. But she did do it at the finish. And went on for a little while, and then they started nagging them out. £80, what's worrying you? I said to him one day. He said, it's as much as I can do. I said, well, I said, don't worry. I said, I ain't bothered about no £80. Well, £80 was a lot of money. I said, but no, I said, I had to pay the rent of it. But the landlord, when I told the landlord, I said, I've let him have more for you. He said, I can't give you rent out of them. See? So I said, well, I had to because of the thing about like the kids he got. So that was it. But anyway, I come home one day, he was leaving all about something or other, I got me odd up there and they got curtains. And I got me odd in the cupboard. So I said, well, that's my room, actually. I said, seeing as you ain't paying anything, I said, my odd stops in the cupboard, I said. So don't shift it. See? So of course, we didn't have much of an altercation then. Now, I come home one Saturday, 12 o'clock, I finish up, and Bob's on a building train. And as I came in, I was just sitting down having me a bit of grub. And these old women shouting and bawling up there about something or other. Well, Amy gets up, and she goes up the passage. Well, I thought to myself, oh, I've got to go up and stop it, like, you know, so... So I didn't want no fisticuffs, especially in no condition, no ticker. So I followed her up. Just as I followed her up, so her old man's come down the stairs behind her. And he's leaned over the banister down and gone to dub Amy one. That's my wife, right? I arrived just in time. I did. With a left hook, I knocked him straight to the top of the banisters. As he came down, so I pushed the left hook in his cock, and over he went over the banisters. The sun's up the top. He had a son. You know, I forget how old he was, but he was capable of wielding a poker and he's trying to brain me through the banisters from the top here up there, see? So, all the help come rushing in from next door, like all the Wilsons and the Scarboroughs, all the help. There was a passage full of us. I'll get the pulls of sun down and belts in one and all. And then I felt somebody on my back and then all the help comes rushing in, see? Well, the right old Melly it was. And I knew all the clocks had come in a way, and nobody was on my side, so I boshed it one. See, all the dials appeared. Yeah, it's funny now, but not at the time it wasn't. All of a sudden, someone was on me back, you know. Don't know what to do, it was a woman or a man, I didn't know at that time. And all of a sudden, I heard somebody say, "Isn't my daughter, was he a bastard?" Of course, he didn't come from my mother-in-law, but I didn't know. So I just disappeared off my back mysteriously. And he landed on a crash here, like a flat of a pancake. Anyway, between us, we sorted them out. They retreated, this mob. And somebody sent the coppers. So down comes the riot squad out at West Ham Lane. Yeah, so this is the truth, yeah. And of course, they come over and want to know all this, that, and about it. So they said, well, we summons them. Don't worry about summons them. I said, they'll leave us alone. So anyway, yeah, this effect, they had the right squad down there and all. The big coppers and a big babble of them. All come down and saw this shim. I was like, it was real lively while it was going. No, I'll bother more like about Amy, me might be, what's it? My wife and any big girls. Anyway, every clock to come away, so I dubbed it one. See, I didn't do too bad. I never had no punches. I had loads of scratches on my neck where this woman had been on. So a couple of they went away. When I used to go to work, I used to run a gauntlet. When I come back, you know how the Indians line up and slosh you when you run through them, don't you? They didn't slosh me. All they was doing was making nasty remarks. I'd come down the street, see, past the doorways and had to get to my house. So I didn't take no bleep notice of that. I knew I could take care of them. And they knew it. They never made no front attacks or assaults on me. Like, they just satisfied with themselves with making nasty remarks, and I just, you know, must have said good stuff, you know, attitude. And I walked by and they never bothered us. Anymore, they didn't. Well, then, down the bottom, mother-in-law, she went to his house going at the back, like next door to Mrs. Foster. No, money then used to live in there, because when I went in it, you had to saw iron bars down from outside. Anyway, like, we got this house, but that particular time I was working in a mint in Rothschild, where I were for the buyer from Cullen Street, my year. And so, well, I thought to buy that to take the house on. And of course, I got a job in the mint because George was here, my brother. He was in the Middlesex, right? And I live in Albert, I was both in the Middlesex, but Albert came to me in my regiment after I left it, and then they found out I wasn't there. They knew him, but from me, he was transferred to Middlesex and went to Singapore. But I settled down in Mrs. Foster's next door. You know, I saw the bathroom, made it a bit sprightly. It wasn't all that good. Amy was fitting very bad then, with her ticker. But in Rothschild's, when we first went in there, I was carrying bags about, see, the coins. Well, people think that you, when you work in a place that's gold and silver and platinum and all the rest of it, refining, you have to go looking for it with a pair of specs. And they wouldn't believe it, you know, you say you took a shovel to it, and a bag of coins come in from somewhere in the bag, and you put them in a scoop, and rest them on your arm, and across the front of the furnace, cupels are called them, you put the front of the scoop on and tip them in, see? And there's a great big bowl, made constructing iron and bonite, sort of a cement. And every so often you used to hack it all out and put a fresh load in, see? I'll give you a description of how it used to work, roughly. And
What year was it you went to work with?
But I can't quite remember now, Jim, to tell you the truth. I picked up a deck back there. I went into the mint from when I come out of there, so it must have been 32, I suppose. Or more, that I did. I've done quite a few years in there, too. 2 or 3 years, and they altered it, they made it shift day. When I first went into there, we did a 12-hour shift from 6 till 6, 7 days a week. And then you changed over from 6 night till 6 the following morning. No day off, no. See, the money was £7.10, well, that was 3 times as much as they got outside. But it was like a battlefield for people with burns and scalds. And see, the point was, when you got this in here, you had to refine it. And the reason, when I first went, I'll start from there. I just got in there and I was, you know, doing a lot of jobs for the time being on a Friday morning. And George got me the job because he was a bit matey with the under manager, a bloke named Belson. Belson. Bellum, something like that. And Belcher. And he said, But I've asked Mr. Belcher, he said, about a job with John. He said, and he wants to come up and see him. He said, I think I'll get it. So I said, well, I can't go up like this. I ain't got a suit, have I? So he said, well, I've got one. Blinking out, the arms come up, cuffs come up to here, they did. You ought to see me walking along. Go back to Charlie Chaplin or wherever it was, in a suit that never fitted. Anyway, they said, all right. He said, yeah, he said, you can come and start, obviously, sir. He's only a young bloke. And, okay. So I come and start, and bloke said to me, he said, on a Friday morning, he said, they went over to pay out. They pay out like it in the army with a table and a trestle, like, you know, board trestles, and a fall. So, of course, they went home and got their pay, and the bloke said to me, Mr. Belcher, Mr. Buess, he was a Swiss. You ever seen a character in the paper of a German spy with an Umbergerat, a big fat cigar, a little short, stumpy bloke? That was him, was he? And he said, Mr. Buess wants to see you. He was the manager, see, so I thought he must be having me on. You know, so I didn't go. Another bloke comes up, oh, a little while later, he said, Mr. Buell, I said, he ain't going to wait all day for you. So if you want your money, get over there. Well, Friday morning, son, early, I ain't done no work. Well, have a perm, you got to start on a Monday, and then go right through the following Friday before you got anything. So you check on the building, you get a sub about halfway through, and they're talking about your waste Friday. But, so I thought, well, I can't lose anything. So when I went in, he was sitting behind the old table, and the guttural sort of English. He said, you'll come, have you?